This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You bitch!
No idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little lassies and flatter she's a me, honey.
Joy Calio, will you move around with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty. I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a curb?
I had a hunch he might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. My name's Daniel. I'm joined in the studio by Gina.
Hello, good evening.
How are you, Gina?
Yeah, good, good. I like this topic.
Well,
I'm grown cinema.
We're diving into the world of homegrown screen content, which actually runs a really broad gamut.
Huge gamut. Because I think when a lot of, well, maybe we talk a lot about film, but homegrown content is not just film. It is web series. It is TV series. It's short films. It's all that sort of stuff.
And while we are, first and foremost, a cinema program, we're also deeply concerned with representation on screen. And when we look at representation, I think it's really important to note some of those other screen modes like web series and TV, because it is on in web series and on TV that the boundaries and the borders of representation are really being pushed.
And for our filmmakers that do go off and make film, they get their, most of their learning happens by making either short films, making web series. It's where we start to train our professionals to actually go off and make TV series and make film. So they need a training ground somewhere and they need help to get that training.
So I think it's really important to do a program like this, looking at a number of different ways that different screens represent not just LGBT people, but LGBT Australians.
Yes.
Because as we were discussing off air, that constitutes a completely different cross-section of people to, say, LGBT people from New York or Uganda or...
Exactly, anywhere. And even parts of Australia, it's very different if I was in Darwin as a lesbian compared to being in Melbourne as a lesbian. Even in Sydney, I'd have to go to home bed early. Don't want to be controversial there, but...
That's a significant point, because the laws governing the way LGBT people can act are actually different from state to state, not just in relation to things like adoption and surrogacy, but also in the way, you know, the broader way that we live our lives.
Exactly.
So, look, really important program, and because it's so important, we do have a jam-packed hour ahead. Three guests joining us this evening.
Three. That's right, yeah.
First, Graham Mason, the CEO of Screen Australia. Now, for people who don't know, Screen Australia is a federal government agency charged with supporting Australian screen development, production and promotion. And it's been a really busy year for Screen Australia this year.
I'm really proud of what Screen Australia have done, and Film Victoria for us here in Victoria, because they've really started to look at our industry at so many different levels. And we've talked about gender diversity. They've done a report about that. They've done a report about diversity. And now screen currency and what that actually means. And it really, basically, it means how, not only how we see ourselves, but what it means for our values, for jobs, for growth, for bringing people into our city from across the world.
It is, in really simple terms, about looking at the value and the worth of our screen industry. not just in economic terms, although the report actually breaks down the economic value of the screen industry in a really...
And it has to, because this is taxpayers' money, Daniel.
Well, it is. It's a government agency.
It's a government agency, and the money is your taxpaying dollars, and the funding gets cut year after year after year. So I'm really glad that they're starting to show what this means in not only dollars and cents, but cultural value and what it does for individuals to be able to tell their story and hear their story.
Because it's actually really interesting, because too often we break up these different kind of streams of value. We see, say, cultural value is somehow distinct from economic value. And what this report, I think, is showing us is that there is a clear business case for promoting cultural value in our screen modes, that somehow cultural value increases economic return.
Huge.
So really interesting chat with Graham Mason coming up later in the program. We're also speaking with Boaz Stark. Boaz is the creator, writer, director of The Horizon, which is perhaps the most popular gay web series in the world.
I think 50 million views was the last. Well, I'm sure it's a few more than that. But the last kind of views on that web series. So that's been going since 2009. And it is a gay male web series. There is a lesbian one called Starting From Now, which is almost half that figure. But yeah, Boaz, which has almost taken another life from the web series, and we'll be talking about where that's going next.
Absolutely, and also speaking with Michael DeMarco, who's just produced, written, directed a feature film called White December. So we'll be chatting with Michael about White December, and Joy listeners might actually be familiar with Michael.
He's an ex-Joyster, isn't he?
Joy alumnus, absolutely. Oh. So we're going to kick things off pretty quickly with a chat with Graham Mason. Now, I sat down with Graham Mason and asked him to tell me a little bit about Screen Currency and Seeing Ourselves.
Screen Australia is delighted to continue its research role on behalf of the sector and the country. We've just launched last week a Screen Currency report, and that builds on the big one on diversity.
Graham, this is Seeing Ourselves, is that right? That's a diversity report that you're referring to?
That's correct.
Great. So let's go back to Seeing Ourselves, because this is something that we've talked quite a bit about on Outtakes before.
I mean, in fact, it's probably even worth just saying again why we did it. Many of us have an idea of how things are on screen, but it was all on gut feeling.
Yeah.
So we felt it was important to actually do proper research.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found, of course, did back up that people of a diversity of sexuality and sexual preferences, of difference in colours, on ethnic background, aren't represented in equal numbers to the way we actually make up the country. There is quite clearly a moral imperative at work here that, you know, everybody's voices should allow to be heard, and people should get the best chances to also tell stories. Even if you're looking at this from a purely commercial lens, like all those people who might say, oh, you're just being too PC, it's daft to not tell stories for the full breadth of the country. 20 years ago, or maybe even less, if you couldn't see yourself on screen, it was almost like tough.
Yeah.
Because, well, there's nowhere else for you to go. Whereas now, the viewers or the listeners can find content which they think reflects themselves or their own views or values by streaming it from somewhere else.
I think it's really important to note exactly what you're saying, that there is a clear business case for diversity on screen, as well as a clear cultural return for diversity on screen. And I think one of the really encouraging things to come out of the Seeing Ourselves report was the drastic increase in representation of Indigenous people on our screens. And I think that was a really optimistic note, because it shows us that if there is a push for diverse representation, we can achieve it.
I mean, you're totally right. I mean, and it's something which Screen Australia and the agencies that came before us in the same space, that we have done an Indigenous space. We have two very strong Indigenous units which stand alone, encourage participation and representation, and that is the fundamental change.
Mm.
Now, it gives us all hope and belief that it's possible. And it also shows it doesn't have to just, again, be PC and worthy. I mean, if you look from Indigenous space, things like Red for Now are just incredibly good television.
Yeah.
And then they happen to be Indigenous.
No one's going to watch something if it's inclusive but bad quality, are they?
Correct. And then you look at something like Deb Malman and Offspring. Yeah. She is just a character in the show.
Mm.
The fact that she is Indigenous is irrelevant. And I think that's also brilliant. What I would like to see, if we could do the same thing in diversity, is I would like to see an LGBTQI character or someone with a disability who is in there not as movie of the week material.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are just a person having a story.
Exactly. We are getting there slowly. I mean, there has been clear strides, but clearly, as Seeing Ourselves reminds us, there is a long way to go. Has Screen Australia had discussions about what it can do to foster further diversity on our screens?
We have indeed. We're sitting down to say, do we all believe that we would be better off morally, culturally, creatively and commercially with a better representation? We, at Screen Australia, do believe that. To date, we've got real buy-in from all the broadcasters, all the big production companies. So we've been working through what can we do now to effect real change.
So any ideas at this stage, what kind of initiatives you'll be rolling out?
Well, there's a few things, obviously. I mean, for Screen Australia, for those listeners who aren't aware, I mean, we are the government's main body in the whole screen sector. So
sure.
We fund development and production, and we do equity, and we do marketing. So things that we're looking at would be, we had a very successful thing we launched earlier in the year called Gender Matters, where we, by the way, treated women's woeful underrepresentation separately, because women are not a minority. So from the get-go, we felt that should be treated separately. But what we've done there is we've invested a lot of money into early-stage development to encourage writers and directors and producers to develop material, which, again, may or may not be about women, but very much at least, I'm not going to tell a woman writer she has to write a story about a woman, but what I do want to see also on the written characters is that the woman, you know, doesn't get murdered on page 4, you know, like it's like in most popular films.
Yeah.
Or stands quietly in the background in a high heel.
Mm.
We would like to do the same thing in diversity. So where I think that what we need to do is encourage people early on in the pipeline to flood it with stories by and or about people from the diverse spectrum that make up Australia.
We are speaking with Graham Mason, the CEO of Screen Australia. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're on Outtakes with Daniel and Gina, and we've been speaking with Graham Mason, CEO of Screen Australia.
Two reports, Seeing Ourselves, which is, of course, the diversity report that we've spoken a lot about on Outtakes, but also Screen Currency.
Mm. And look, I like that he did kind of talk about, you know, the affecting real change, and that was kind of the conversation you guys were having towards the end there. But, yes, gender matters is important, and for me as a female filmmaker, fabulous.
Yeah.
But we need more than that. And I think it's already showing, it's already making, you know, pathways forward. So we need to be, I really hope they come up with a scheme really quickly.
Yeah.
That embraces diversity. Because I think Benjamin Law recently was talking about this in making the Family Law the TV series. They're really struggling to find talent because talent is going overseas, and we need to be supporting our filmmakers to be making these films. Initiatives like Gender Matters, like some of the other initiatives we've seen with Indigenous culture, to enable people to tell these stories that are lacking.
Look, I think these reports are really encouraging. I think this is where we kind of regain our bearings, see what we need to do, and then hopefully develop real action plans. Because what concerns me about reports like Seeing Ourselves and Screen Currency is they're couched in a lot of rhetoric. And it's very easy to somehow just purvey that rhetoric instead of actually taking concrete steps.
And Gender Matters was great. It never said we're doing a quota here. It didn't say anything like that, but it actually set up some schemes that people had to apply for that enabled some of the blockers that were there for emerging or even entry-level filmmakers to make, where they're not getting experience because they're not given the opportunity to get experience. And sometimes that's all it needs. So a couple of schemes, and some of those schemes have now become bigger schemes because those filmmakers have now opened it up to others and are bringing people along with them.
I agree with you. I think what's really great about some of Screen Australia's initiatives, and in fact Film Victoria as well, is that unlike certain other agencies in this country and outside of the country, they are not using quotas.
No.
Because we know that quotas don't actually work.
No.
So I think the direction is encouraging. The question is, will we get there?
I really hope we do, because we saw from the Screen Diversity one, especially just people with a disability, the statistics were appalling. There is absolutely hardly any representation of people with disability.
And now that we know that, there's no excuse not to do anything about it.
Exactly. So we are speaking with Graham Mason, CEO of Screen Australia.
Screen currency is all about valuing the screen industry, not just economically, but culturally as well. Can you give us a précis of why a report like screen currency is so important?
We all, when we're chatting around, particularly those of us who work in the media like you and I do, we think it really matters and we think it's really important. But we felt, let's get again a very clear, true picture of the value of this industry, and also think from that, what can we do with it and for it differently and better? So we found that the sector brings in $3 billion a year to the Australian GDP. Now, that's a really sizable number.
Absolutely.
And on that, we were incredibly clear. We didn't take any credit or monetary value for the international work. If you go to the cinema and you buy a ticket to go and see Mad Max, that counted. But if you bought a ticket to Star Wars, we didn't count it, nor did we even give ourselves any benefit for advertising. Now, again, most of your listeners know that if they're watching commercial telly or Foxtel, the content on screen is almost always Australian, and it is driving all the advertising dollars, which sells cars and bank products and health insurance. Now, we are the main driver for all that, but even there, we decided to be very conservative. So in economic terms and employment terms, it's massive. We export more dollar terms, hard dollars, than the sugar and honey products do. We employ more people in paying income who pay tax. I don't mean just people doing stuff for nothing, like lots of yours, my friends probably do. We employ more people in tax-paying jobs than the oil and gas industries do.
Wow.
It is a big business. But then the second thing you asked about was also we tried to put a value on the cultural benefit. 98% of Australians say they watch Australian content.
Yeah.
I need to know who those 2% are who don't. I need to find them. We found the bulk, I mean, I think it was 76% of people said they really valued and preferred to watch Australian content.
Mm.
Not exclusively, obviously, no one does that, but that they said it really matters to them and that they find it substantially different to other content.
I think one of the more interesting components of the report, at least for me, was the idea of the different types of cultural value that the screen industry returns, not just kind of instrumental value or institutional value, but also the intrinsic value of the screen industry itself.
This is one of the interesting ones. It's highly subjective, so it's like the idea. The Minister for Arts and Communications recently in Melbourne last week launched the report. He gave an example of the film Gallipoli.
Mm.
Now, some of your listeners may remember this. It's a film from quite a few decades ago by an amazing filmmaker called Peter Weir. And he said that when he started to make Gallipoli, the film, Gallipoli and Anzac Day were not remembered or celebrated the way they are today. And he made a film which actually showed the diggers, warts and all, as young men who were facing this incredible challenge.
Mm.
And that film fundamentally re-energized the Gallipoli encounter and the celebrations around it to what your listeners today are aware of. Really, that film, like many films or dramas or documentaries, they don't just reflect us. They change the way we see ourselves and others see us. There's other examples. The soaps have fundamentally changed Australians' ability to deal with differences. So particularly gay characters appearing in some of those soaps back in time, when homosexuality, for example, was still outlawed, was an incredibly brave thing to do.
And critically important as well. It's something we come back to on this program time and time again, the immeasurable importance of representation. And so I think when a lot of people from the LGBT community are looking at this report and thinking about things like institutional value, they'll be thinking of films like, you know, big films like Holding the Man or little films like Downriver, which contribute to that changing perception of LGBT people and LGBT issues.
I agree with you entirely. And I mean, we're delighted to get from these two different reports recognizing that screen is probably the most effective way to change the mainstream population's view, much more than a news or current affairs show or getting hectored by a shock jock. When you see a Holding the Man and you realize that love is love is love, or the most profitable film that any of the agencies in film have worked in, not the highest dollar amount, but just the most profitable compared to the investment, is still Priscilla.
Amazing.
So you have a film about two drag queens and a transsexual going across a desert, but really, as those who've seen the film know, it's a lot more than that. It's actually about love and acceptance and dealing with who you are and how you deal with your family. So underneath the exuberance, that film changed Australians and it changed the view of Australia in the world.
Remarkable how a film like that can play such a pivotal role in changing attitudes.
I think it's fundamental. If you look at things like House Husbands, where there were a gay couple who are just there as a gay couple. So again, they're not there as in a plot device to make a big thing for 1 week. Another thing which is fascinating to us is that we do a lot of funding of digital content, and we find it fascinating with the younger demographic, you know, sort of the 16 to 30s. They are much more blind to gender, sexuality, colour. That's exciting, and
absolutely,
I would love to work with that more to reflect that on our television, and even more. Television's better, then features are terrible, and we need to make a big shift there.
Why do you think it is, just as a kind of way of wrapping up, Graeme, why do you think it is that we are seeing so much more progress on online? Yes, television is certainly pushing the boundaries, but screen is really lagging behind. Why is that, do you think?
I think it's a couple of reasons. I think the small screen digital stuff, there's very few barriers to entry. Anyone can make it. I also do have great hope and faith in people of a slightly younger age. Television, I do believe it's because, again, they are trying to sell to a mass market. So really, advertisers, as I said, need to sell to people of multiple sexualities, genders, races. So that drives commercial television to play more reflective of the country. If you look at the big reality shows, they're very relaxed about people's sexuality, age, race. When you get to film, it's expensive. It's slightly old-fashioned in its funding and distribution models, and they get more timid. Television is in your living room, so they try and reflect it a little bit more. So for us, film is the area we're trying to change the most. Television, I want it to be as reflective as it can be, and digital at the moment gives me great joy.
Well, that was my chat with Graeme Mason, the CEO of Screen Australia. And it is really interesting to hear about how deeply imbricated the kind of economic value of our screen industry is with the cultural and audience value of our screen industry.
Look, I think we are moving forward, and I think TV networks are starting to pick up all the sort of stuff he was talking about. It, of course, web series and shorts and all that sort of digital media is easy to get people to tell stories. It's cheap. It's easy to make.
But
you can do it on your phone.
It's
hard. It costs a lot of money, and I'm sad that, you know, we are, you know, money is the blocker from getting our true selves on screen and on TV screens especially. But I think we're moving forward. From where we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I think I've a lot of hopes for the future.
Look, we are moving forward. There's no doubt that we are moving forward. But it's certainly true to say that it is online and on our TVs that the boundaries are being pushed. Mm. And that's why we're speaking with Boaz Stark, the creator, writer, and director of The Horizon, perhaps the most popular gay web series in the world.
I think we said before 50 million views. Advertisers who are scared to advertise, there you go, 50 million views. Oh. That series is
cultural and economic case.
Yep.
Absolutely. Our chat with Boaz right after this. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where tonight we have dived into the world of homegrown screen content.
Yes, we have, and we are very lucky to be speaking with Boaz Stark. Boaz, have I said it correctly?
No.
How do I pronounce it? Boaz.
Boaz. I know you want to say it like Boaz because of the OA, but Boaz.
Reminds me of a beer, that's why I want to say it that way. No, I'm kidding. How are you? Welcome to Outtakes.
Now, Boaz, you are the creator, writer, and director of The Horizon, which is, it's been billed as the most popular gay web series in the world. I mean, that's a pretty big title.
Yes, it's the most watched gay web series in the world, so I suppose that makes it the most popular. too.
I think there's a fair case for that, Boaz.
You can own that credit, absolutely. Now, you've come from not only writing this series, but how different was this from Sons and Daughters and Home and Away and Neighbours that some of our listeners may be a little bit more familiar
that
with?
That you have also
yeah,
been
that
writing.
You've written for.
First of all, thank you for ageing me.
hey, I watched all that stuff too.
Sons and Daughters was my first writing job ever, and I was a child prodigy, so I was basically a teenager. And how different is it? Oh, it's very different because, first of all, the content is a lot racier, and secondly, because it's a web series, I get to do things the way I want to do them. I don't have to sort of follow producers' whims. Yes, exactly, and conservative networks. Your rules, and so we get to do things the way that we want them, and I get to write it the way I want to, which is emancipating.
Boaz, one question I wanted to start with, when you are writing for networks, the budget's kind of, it's there, it's set, it's done. Did I read somewhere correctly that when you started this series, you were looking at a budget of $3,000?
Yeah, it was crazy.
In 2009? Wow.
Yeah, we got a bit of money from Acon. I mean, it was a brand new concept at that stage, and they gave us a bit of seed money, which was fantastic. And we basically paid the caterers with that money. Everybody else worked for free. It was done by film students. Actors weren't paid. I wasn't paid to write the scripts. And it went viral. So despite the fact that the production values are super low, I like to think that people got emotionally engaged with the story and got into it that way.
Now, for people who don't know, Boaz, The Horizon, it's a web series based on the lives and the loves of gay men in Sydney, so it is a uniquely Australian story. And you yourself have said that it's really important to see our stories the way that we as Australians see them. So how are our stories as LGBT people different to perhaps web series coming out from elsewhere in the world?
I wouldn't call it a uniquely Australian story. It's a story that's set in Sydney, and so it kind of has an Australian vibe about it. But I think the reason why the show is so popular around the world is because we kind of tap into a universal gay culture, Western culture anyway. And I think that's why it's popular.
So how would you describe that universal gay culture?
Well, I think we deal with stories that people who aren't gay don't necessarily have to think about. I mean, just for instance, at the moment we're exploring PrEP, in a storyline, and I found it a way to kind of make it resonate emotionally with the characters. But it's a PrEP story, and a lot of straight people haven't even heard about PrEP, let alone have storylines about it in their shows,
or need to worry about it in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. It's very exciting. We're sponsored primarily by the AIDS Council of New South Wales, so the show does have a kind of like a gay men's health vibe through it, through the storylines.
So Acon were with you from the beginning, clearly.
Yeah.
And you've obviously had other sponsors help sort of put the show together. Have you had any funding agencies kind of come to the party with this, or has it really been the community? So from your sponsors that I can see, it's usually mostly community sponsors.
Yes, we've got corporate sponsors like General Pants, and although I better be careful now because I sort of have to name all of them, so I'd be happy. But we do have corporate sponsorship, which is fantastic. Ansel just came on board, which is a natural fit because we do talk about safe sex, so it's great to be able to weave that brand into the show. But we have also had sponsorship from government agencies. Screen Australia helped us create a pilot, and they've just given us some money to do our post-production for season 7 and 8 with, which is a huge help because we are really, despite our popularity, we're still low budget, and we tend to get enough money to make the series and underpay everybody, but not to really thrive. So any sponsorship is really welcome.
It's interesting, you know, because we were speaking earlier in the program, in fact, with Graham Mason about the importance of online screen content. Graham says that it's really important because it is where we're seeing the boundaries being pushed in terms of representation. And I wonder, as someone doing the pushing of the boundaries, how you feel about that?
It is emancipating to be able to write stories based on people I know and situations that I've been in or have experienced through friends. Yeah, it's great. And in terms of responsibility of that, I think that, of course, because I'm writing it, my personal philosophies about, or morality about gay men and you know, romantic situations kind of comes through. But I try to keep it balanced so that in terms of storylines and characters show different points of view and different types of characters so that everybody feels kind of, a lot of people feel represented. They see themselves on screen or people that they know and they can relate to it.
How do you think the production would be different if you had to produce this for a forum where you were writing for Neighbours, say, or for...
It wouldn't happen.
Or in fact...
if it was through like a commercial network or... first of all, I agree with Gina. It probably wouldn't happen. And in fact, we shot a pilot and we shopped it around and it was probably even racier, a bit racier than the web series. And it hasn't sold yet. But it would be different in that I know that executives, television executives, tend to be quite conservative and they want to appeal to the biggest market, which, and understandably so, and therefore they want to offend the least amount of people. And so I suppose, I assume I would be told to kind of make it a bit more, a bit less racy. Although I think one of the reasons why the show is so successful is
Yeah, it's raw.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't hold back. If I do hold back, it's because I mean, in terms of nudity, for instance, we're on YouTube and I probably could get away with more nudity, but then people might complain. Some people have complained about really sexual situations and they slap an 18-plus restriction on it so that not everyone can watch it, or and I don't want that.
I know, Boaz, you were saying that you feel like it is a very global story and has a very global sensibility, but I do feel like it does have quite a unique Australian sensibility as well, the way that it is so raw.
It is a boy from Bega. I mean, it's really... I agree with you, Dan. I do feel... A kind of similar to when I was watching Queer as Folk, I felt like that's not a story that we could have told here. It was a very different scene, very different lifestyle. But I'm not a gay man. This is a lesbian watching on. So that's
well, even in relation to how different the British series was to the to the American series, I think series do tend to take with them the sensibility of the place where they're made, and that I feel is certainly true for The Horizon. I mean, it does feel very Australian.
I find that really interesting. Sorry to jump in. I find that really interesting. I suppose maybe because I'm inside it, I don't see those differences. I see the broader kind of story appeal of the way people respond to each other, I find is kind of human, you know, like universally human rather than quintessentially Australian. But it's great to get an outsider's point of view on it because I don't see it. I'm maybe too subjective. It's too... I'm too close to it.
And I think as an Aussie, though, it's something I like about it because I see my male friends in it and, you know, I hear their accents in it and I hear their stories and style in it. So that, for me, that's what I really kind of enjoy about that. But this is taking on another life. So our audience can, of course, go on YouTube and see seasons 1 to 6 and hopefully soon you'll be having, you know, season 7. But it's not just going to be on YouTube. This is going somewhere else. Can you talk us through that? It's an excellent film.
Well, we do have season 7. You can already watch it on a platform called Hyvio, H-Y-V-I-O. And we moved to Hyvio for season 7 basically because we get a better advertising deal. YouTube's fantastic in terms of getting the story out there, but they're not the best advertising payers in the world, and we're trying to survive.
Yeah, sure.
So we're on hyvio.com/The Horizon, if you don't mind me saying.
Of course.
But we also produced this pilot last year, which we have shopped around to networks that haven't bought yet, but we're still hoping that something will happen. In the meantime, we are putting it, it's on Hyvio at the moment, but we're going to go onto iTunes with it, and it's going to be pay-per-view, only, I think, less than $5 to watch it, but it's the first two seasons reinvented and reimagined, I should say, and directed by Stephen Elliott of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert fame. And that was incredible, that experience to work with him and see what he did with the material.
Well, Stephen has said that he was tickled pink to be able to work with you and with The Horizon, so that must feel pretty great too.
Well, Stephen has been mentoring me. I'd written TV for many years, but I'd never directed, and I knew Stephen socially, and when I first decided to direct, very naively, because I thought, well, how hard can it be? Stephen kind of mentored me through it, and he was a great person to be able to talk to about, you know, what I was doing. And so, and I learned a lot by then, because then I didn't want to have the responsibility of shooting the pilot, directing the pilot, because it was bigger than me, I thought, my level of experience. And so Stefan came on board, and he was fantastic to observe.
I mean, look, it has, you can see it's definitely developed from 2009 to what we're seeing now, hugely. From 4 minutes to...
A little bit bigger than the
and that helps. That definitely helps. But I read a review, so it had its international, this kind of, I don't want to call it a mashup, it's not that. Is it a short film or a film? Or a long one-hour episode. What would you call it?
It was called The Pilot. Now we're calling it The Special.
So we'll call it The Special.
And it is it's the first two seasons with the cast that we went on from, because we changed cast a few times after the first couple of seasons, but then from season three we stuck with the same cast, and we've done the first two seasons with that, most of those casts.
Because it had its international debut at Raindance Film Festival.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Well, this reviewer seemed to love it because for them it was full of nostalgia from everything they loved about the web series. So I think for those who have watched the series or possibly haven't and need to start with something, this is a good way to get back into it.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it is. It's everything that was good about the first two seasons, but done much more with a much more sort of visual flair. You could watch the special and then move on to season three pretty smoothly.
So for people wanting to access that special, what's the site?
At the moment, you can go to hyvio.com. It's hyvio.com/The Horizon, and it'll be there.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Boaz. We are huge fans of the series.
That's great to hear. Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Great to be able to talk about the show, because it's just from a gay men's health point of view, it's great to spread the word.
You are listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Action!
Let's go.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where we have dived well and truly into the world of homegrown screen content.
And that song was very appropriate, Daniel, especially with Stephen Elliott working with Horizon now. So from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, now working with this latest film, Horizon, or Special. We'll call it Special.
A special, absolutely.
That's right. But we're moving along. Yes.
We have Michael DeMarco in the studio. Thank you for joining us, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Now, a lot of our listeners will be very familiar with you.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully.
So tell us, you're a Joy alumnus?
Yes. I ex-Joy host. People will probably know me, our listeners will probably know me better, rather, from my work with Purple Speech here at Joy.
Well, we're thrilled to have you in the Outtakes studio, although as fantastic a show as Purple Speech is, that's not why we've brought you in.
No.
We've brought you in to speak about White December, which is a new film that's premiering in just a few weeks' time.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
And this is a film that you've co-produced,
written,
and directed.
Yes, definitely.
So tell us about White December.
So White December is based on a true story. It's based on my personal true story of my life and my journey that I've gone through over the last couple of years, focusing more on my journey last year. So it just follows, it's a story of love. So it follows my journey of falling out of love with a long-term relationship that I was in, and also falling out of love within myself. So losing that trust and losing that faith that I had. And then also exploring, most importantly, is the love between a mother and a son relationship. So my mum's relationship and myself is also shown a lot in this film. So we're just the three actors, and we follow Daniel, who is a lead actor in this film, played by Brody Messini, and he plays me, a representation of me, which is quite interesting. And yeah, and then there's Alex Jordan, who plays Rose, my mother in the film. She has been diagnosed with breast cancer, just like my mum was, and we go through that experience and that emotion that the mother and the son go through. It's based around Christmas time, so it is just a really beautiful, simple, magical, emotional film that I've just thrown everything into and see what comes out the other end.
And very timely as well with Christmas, just a few short weeks
away. I did that on purpose. I wanted to tell a Christmas film and show it at Christmas time, and just keep it, like, there's no big special Hollywood effects and there's no, like, you know, people dropping out of the ceiling and stuff. It's just a very simple story.
Well, thank you for that, because our screens need some stories and less effects,
and some emotion too, I think. Yeah. And there's definitely a lot of that in this film, a lot of natural magic.
So what is the genre of the film?
Clearly, it is romance, a romance drama. Okay. So there is a love interest between, so it is a gay film or a rainbow film, or LGBTI film. So Justin is another character played by Damien Forbes, and he forms the love interest of Daniel, which is my love interest in real life and in the film. And so we follow their sort of connection, I suppose, and during that time, Daniel falls in love with this person, but also within himself again, and rediscovers that.
We are talking about homegrown screen content today, and some of the practical concerns when you put together a film or a web series or whatever it may be. And I wanted to ask you about that, but I do want to know what it's like directing your real-life partner in a love story with someone else. That must be difficult.
It was challenging emotionally for me, but I think the key that I found was not focus too much on the technicalities of the performance and let these actors take on the journey and the story themselves and recreate the story, because it's got to be believable on screen as well. I can push it and go, no, that didn't happen. You need to do it like this. I thought, I'm just going to let them go for it.
Can I be cheeky and say, did you ever go, that's not how you kiss him. This is how I kiss him. Get over here.
No. There's actually no kissing in this film. I purposely put no kissing.
I love a good kiss.
So there's a lot of intimacy. There's no sex scene in this film either. So there's a lot of intimacy without kissing, without sex. So it'll be interesting to see how the audience reacts to that.
Oh, now we know, especially when it comes to queer film festivals, that LGBT audiences, they do like a bit of action
in their films. Oh, look, there's definitely a bit of nudity.
I think romance is the good way to say that's my genre here.
I mean, no, that's why I wanted to ask, what was the rationale behind leaving a kiss or any kind of sex scene out of this?
Just to be different. It's expected. Yeah. In any romance film, whether it's gay or straight, it's expected to see sex and kissing in a film. you know, they almost say you can't tell a love story without showing that. So I thought, well, I'm going to tell a love story without showing it. The love and the connection's definitely there.
Yeah.
It's just shown through more verbal and other body languages instead.
So are you coming at this as a director making films or a writer or what?
Bit of both.
Bit of both.
Bit of both. Ideally, I like to consider myself more a writer these days. But definitely, I mean, I did direct this film and I will probably direct another film after this. But writing's definitely sort of my future angle.
We are speaking with Michael DeMarco, the writer, director and co-producer of White December, which is having its premiere screening here in Melbourne in just a few short weeks. More with Michael right after this.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where we are looking at homegrown screen content.
And for homegrown screen content, we thought we'd bring in a homegrown filmmaker.
Absolutely.
A Joy homegrown filmmaker.
Thank you for sticking around, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Michael, where did you kind of get your grounding? So, like, where did you sort of get an interest in making films and writing stories and that sort of stuff?
By accident. I've always loved writing and the concept of storytelling. And obviously, like, I did my school time learning a little bit about the craft. Mm-hmm. And then from there, just threw myself into it. Local productions, local films, music videos, started off doing photo shoots and just worked my way around the industry until I found what it is that I was looking for, and filmmaking just kept coming back and kept speaking to me.
It's interesting because obviously we've been looking at the industry quite a bit this evening. We'd love to hear your thoughts on what the industry is like for an emerging filmmaker.
Yeah, what I'm discovering very, very quickly is the Australian industry especially is small. It's very small. People think it's growing. It's bigger than what it probably was a few years ago, but it's still small. So it is who you know, unfortunately.
But one of the side effects of having a small industry, and I mean, that's because we are a small country in terms of our population. You know, we are limited in the content that we can put on our screens.
Yeah. There are so many great independent films out there that don't get seen or aren't heard of or known because there's just not enough either funding or support.
I mean, is that something that you're worried about? Your story is primarily about gay characters.
Yes.
Are you worried about finding a screen for this film?
No, because I think we're learning as a country to accept equality a lot quicker now, and people are open to it a lot more, and there's a lot more celebrity endorsement. So I think people are starting to understand that it's we're not that scary, and you know, we can be seen, and we can still tell beautiful stories.
And the difficulty is funding is a major thing here.
Huge.
And I think a lot of the stories that we do see on screens are done because, one, the love of the craft, and one, because we want to see our own story up there. And if no one else does it, sometimes we do it ourselves. So I think, you know, that's definitely a thing for even when we were speaking with Boaz from Horizon, they had to get corporate sponsors to get them started on $3,000. You've made an hour and a half feature film.
Yes.
I'm glad to see there's three characters in it because that would have brought your budget down a bit. is it all in one location? How? I don't want to ask you a figure if you don't want to reveal it.
No, I filmed this on a $0 budget. Yeah. My actors worked for free, which doesn't happen very often these days, but they read the script first, believed in the story, and they worked for free. The crew worked for free, and the equipment was donated. Obviously, there was budget in regards to, like, catering, some location funding for the actors to stay in because we filmed in Bridgetown in WA, and that's 3 hours south of Perth City.
Yeah.
So it's a very small country town. The actors stayed with us on location for the duration of filming, so I paid for that accommodation. So those little things came out of my pocket, and that's pretty much how I reckon I probably spent a total of $3,000 on this film.
Wow.
It's not been easy. I mean, I had to fly there myself and live there. I mean, I'm not from Perth. I'm from Melbourne. So
why did you choose to shoot it there?
My art director lives there. So okay. We're good friends, and she did used to live in Melbourne, and she moved to Perth and lives in this beautiful country town. And I just thought, I'd love to make a film here one day. And 3 years later, I'm finally doing it. And that's the reason why I went down there to film.
Well, congratulations, because it is a labor of love. And to throw 3 years of your life into a project, that's a big commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're finally at kind of at the end of that process.
Finally seeing the light, the film light, yes.
You get to take it to an audience now. That's the best part.
That's the scary part. No, the filming is easy.
So tell us about some of the screenings.
So the Melbourne premiere, which is the official world premiere, if you want to call it, of White December, is on December 16th in Melbourne. So that's exciting. There are a few tickets still available.
Any planning to take the film around Australia?
Yeah, so because we did film in Perth, I will do a Perth premiere, which will be early next year. And then Sydney is definitely on the cards, and maybe Brisbane. There's been a few
expressions of interest.
For Brisbane. And then from there, the film circuit, and then I'll release it online, and it'll be available for free, so you won't have to pay for the film to watch it. You'll be able to download it for free online.
Well, congratulations to you, and thank you for joining us this evening, Michael. So that brings us to the end of another program.
Well, I feel hopeful at the end of this program.
It has been a rather encouraging program, hasn't it? A really interesting hearing from Graham Mason about the direction of the industry and how we've kind of stopped for a moment to take stock of the importance of the Australian screen industry, and then hearing from local filmmakers and web series makers like Michael, like Boaz, it is encouraging.
It's really encouraging, and it's showing we want to hear our stories so much that we're starving ourselves to tell them sometimes.
But even
someone like Boaz, who has amazing writing credits, he's worked for commercial television, still finds the need to be out there telling the stories of our community, and he's doing that. And it's probably costing him money to do it, yet he is doing it. So
that's because we know the importance of representation. We know how important it is, and it's something we come back to time and time again. Mm. But that's it. That's it for another week on Outtakes. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.